This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Today's show is brought to you by Texture. Remember hearing us talk about Next Issue? Well, they've changed their name to Texture and added all kinds of new features. To get your all-access pass to the world's most popular magazines, visit texture.com/badchristian and sign up for your free trial today.
Today's show is brought to you by MeUndies. MeUndies has the world's most comfortable pair of underwear. Right now, and they're offering BC listeners 20% off and free shipping. So head over to MeUndies.com/BadChristian and get your first pair today.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
What's up, you dunces? Hope you guys are getting along as good as I am. We're getting along real good for this Christmas season here. And as promised, I have a little bit of an announcement to make here. It's going to be in the episode as well with Devin. But Devin is coming back to do some shows, acoustic stuff, in January and hopefully later in the year too. So we're going to do some really special acoustic, an evening with Matt and Toby and Devin, maybe Dave, maybe the whole band. We're not sure yet. But it's going to be January 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. It's going to be in Texas. It's going to be very special shows. These tickets are going to go on sale soon. They're going to go on sale next Tuesday, December 29th. So be ready. Pay attention. This is an exciting thing for us to be doing. Hope you enjoy this episode, hanging out, talking to Devin a little bit. Also, I hope you got our Christmas EP. It's free. There's just a little bit of time left to get that. Go to badchristian.com/EmeryChristmas. It's a collection of 8 songs over the years that we did that are, you know, Christmas songs, live stuff, different stuff, a couple of studio tracks. That's free. Please go get that. And also, if you're still doing Christmas shopping, or even if you're not doing Christmas shopping, but you ever do any shopping at all, we now have a link that you can shop through Amazon.com. And if you go to Amazon.com through our link, which is on the Jabberjaw Media website, go to JabberjawMedia.com and then go to Bad Christian. There's an Amazon link there. If you bookmark that, click through it, go in there and shop just like you would shop on for anything on Amazon, guitar strings, diapers, electronics, Christmas gifts, whatever it is, it gives us a kickback. And in fact, it's 4% of the amount of money that you spend there. And that's a real nice thing you can do that gives actually supports us, gives us cash, and you don't have to spend any money that you aren't spending already. So a lot of people have asked for that, and there you go. So please, please use that. Thank you guys for all the support this year. This has been an unbelievable year. This podcast has been downloaded millions of times. And it's the most fun thing I've ever done. So thank you guys sincerely. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you guys. Okay, let's do it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Motherfucker. Boom, boom. It's the Bad Christian Podcast.
That was all
that
for
was
us.
Good.
Nobody got to see what we just did.
Yeah, y'all got insane, wow. Like animals.
Yeah, we got just totally. Joey, you lured me in, and we were just bobbing our heads and saying.
You know what you haven't done in a long time?
That what?
My kids just love is when you go,
your kids love the podcast. You just let them hear the first minute, or
they only like the profanity.
Yeah, Rosa loves cussing, man.
Do they? How do you let them listen to it all? You just played some beatboxes sometimes, or what?
When everything was fresh and new, Priscilla and I wanted to, you know, she wanted to hear it, and typically we're in the car together, so we would put everything up in the front, but a lot of the intros are clean, so we'd let the kids listen, and they just loved it. They loved the beatboxing, but when Toby went off on the, I don't even know what you did. It's like you're talking and beating at the same time.
It was, yeah, I guess that's what it was. So Priscilla, is she still a pretty full-time listener to the podcast, or not really?
She's so busy. I think she
bless her heart.
Yeah, she's probably listened to, I would say, 60% of the episodes, maybe.
Yeah, Jess is super busy, too, so she has 2 jobs that she's working.
Right.
So she does listen. I came home the other day.
She's gone through breast cancer. She's beat that.
Right.
I mean,
it's unbelievable. So she listens occasionally. But Matt, where's Bridget at these days with listening to the podcast?
I have no
idea.
What
percentage has she listened to? If you had to bet $10,000 of your own dollar.
I'm certain she has heard it before. She overhears a ton of it when I put it together, edited, or recorded, though.
Right. Okay.
So if you count, I mean, she always hears me working on it when I'm working on it.
Right.
So she's very familiar with the type of content that it is, and she doesn't think it. She just thinks it's just normal. I mean, it sounds like us talking. She said, tell Toby, shut up. That's, you know, when she hears it from the room.
She
thinks he's so funny or something like that, you know.
Screw her.
That kind of thing. But I don't know that she puts headphones in and listens to it. I don't think that's, I really don't.
There's a chance that she would hide that from you. Like, she might have listened to a lot and you just, she would
She'd be embarrassed.
Secret.
Yeah, that's possible. It's not a chance.
That
it's possible. Just, she wouldn't know how to, she is lacking in some areas of development. From, I would suggest, possibly her childhood, and she lacks some of those basic skills of communicating and encouragement and some things like that. She really actually physically or developmentally kind of lacks the ability to engage. Like, it's possible for her to do, but she struggles in that direct encouragement, eye contact, affirming way. She doesn't do that very well.
She doesn't really have love.
That's it. Hey, I was looking for the word.
Yeah, couldn't recall the word.
Here's what's funny about our podcast is, like, from a general standpoint, I want more and more people to hear it, our numbers to grow and all that stuff. But then when you get into my life and, like, specific people, I don't want people to hear it.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Definitely.
So listen to this. There's a Mexican restaurant that is just in walking distance from where we have our church services. And so this past Sunday, I had some trash that I was taking out to the dumpster that was on the other side of the Mexican restaurant. I'm walking by, and there's a girl hanging out with her friends. This girl's a friend of mine, goes to the church, and she's like, oh, I was just telling them to tune into your podcast. And I just look at her. I was just like,
Please don't.
In front of everybody, I said, yeah, you just may not want to do that. Because she's saying, here's my pastor. Check out this podcast. And I mean,
pastor, not neighbor, anything. I don't want anybody to listen to it.
I mean, it's hilarious that when people say, hey, man, I've been listening to your podcast. I don't know what that means. Does that mean that now I'm on the hot seat and I need to explain myself? Or does that mean, man, I think this is great? I mean, it's just crazy. I just don't know.
I just hope. Yeah. I want as many people possible that I don't know personally to listen to the podcast. Right. Anybody that I know personally, just don't do it. Don't do it. One thing that it was funny this week, so Joey and I had our one-on-one at work.
Yep.
And so this is where we kind of have to see State of the Union, almost like what's going on, you know. And you remember a couple podcasts back, we were talking about it, how you were saying, hey, you should, you know, you should just only do music and you should, you know, your job at church.
I was telling you, quit your job.
Right. Quit your job. Write more music. Do podcasts. All this stuff. You know, you're a creative type. Matt was being complimentary to me, and so we were talking, but it was really funny. So this has been weeks now since that, and we're sitting there, and Joey goes, "This is our one-on-one.
This is for your job,
right? This is
your
job.
Boss employee one-on-one meeting."
Joey goes, "Toby, I know you think I'm insecure, but you can leave immediately. I will totally have your back through all of it." I never said you're insecure. What are you talking about? Insecure? Well, I said you're one of the most secure people I know. You'll lay in any shape. Do anything. There's no insecurity in Joey Spencer whatsoever.
It was a poor choice of word. What I was alluding to was
you can leave immediately.
You think I'm going to be super upset if you don't work here anymore?
Right.
So that's what I was talking about when I mean insecure.
But it goes back to this thing that I've really been in my mind about how to communicate. But okay, I am a good communicator and a poor communicator in a lot of ways, right? Like we were talking about this. How many times has Matt and Joey had a knockdown drag out on the podcast? And then how many times has Toby and Joey had a knockdown? And probably many times Joey and I are in more agreement than you and Matt are.
Yeah.
I would think a lot of times we think a lot alike about a lot of stuff. And so it's really interesting. So although I'm making good points, the way I present them sometimes is crazy, but I really do this thought of people, the way they think of me and the way they think of Joey, like Joey is not emotional. He doesn't get that emotional about things. Stuff doesn't really affect him emotionally. I mean, he's an emotional guy, like kids or wife or whatever, but he is very sensitive to stuff. Like when we talked about that idea, even for entertainment purposes, in Joey's mind, he goes, oh, got to take this a little deeper. What does this mean? Toby might not work here anymore. I want to honor Toby. I want to honor his family. Maybe he should work here. Maybe I should. And he really thinks about all this.
He's been sitting on for a couple of weeks.
And you and I are just goofing, right? Yeah.
I am emotional. I'm super loud,
yeah,
obnoxious. The way I present information is in and through emotion and all that stuff. But Joey is sensitive. And so it was really interesting seeing that. And I realized it's helping me a little bit to see how to communicate so that Joey can understand what I'm saying. Because I'm doing a poor job. Not, and when I say sensitive, I don't mean, oh, he's a little wham, just going to cry all the time. That's not what I'm saying. I think it, what I'm saying is it stuff deeply affects him where I'm walking away from it. And then I'm shocked by 2 or 3 weeks later, goes, I know you think this, but I will support you through this.
Like, that's the best you've ever articulated what you mean by sensitivity, because
I'm learning.
I will say I 100% agree with what you just said. And I've always argued against, every time you said, dude, you're the most sensitive person, I've always been like, no way. But what you just described, 100%. I think what I would call it is a feeler.
You are a feeler?
I think so. Like,
yeah, you're affected more deeply, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and, so, and, but sensitive, probably, according to Webster, you're probably describing a version of sensitivity. But yeah, you're right. When you call me sensitive, I always thought, oh, if you call me bald, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you
not
said
at all.
That sort of thing.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think you're probably insecure. Well, it's probably a bad word because I think you're one of the most secure people I know. Like,
secure, for sure.
You don't get embarrassed about anything. You'll talk to anybody, walk up to anybody,
right,
say the greatest thing.
It's definitely not
even
insecure.
Harsh stuff, like the way you handle stuff, you do not feel that way. Like, obviously, but if something comes up, Matt and I are goofing on the podcast, you go, wait, what does this actually mean?
Well,
I need to take this
also,
in.
Also, my communication style is just wide open. And even if there's like, even if I doubt, like, I didn't necessarily think you were going to respond by saying, yeah, you're right. You got me, man. Thanks for bringing this up. I do want to quit right now. I didn't think that was going to happen, but it's almost just like I want to open that up just in case there's a part of Toby that says, glad we're talking about this, man.
Right. You and Matt, that might be like a little bit of empathy too there, which I feel, but like that's why I realized, wait a minute. Like, to me, it catches me totally off guard that we're making kind of light and sport of just talking about, well, if Toby goes or whatever, haha, that'll be what Toby could do this. It's just conversation topic. And now I realize, like, wait a minute, I have to realize that when we said that, Joey's going to think about it more. So I can't just overreact and be like blown away, like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm not going anywhere. That's my first reaction. You know what I mean? Like, of course, like the first thing I said was, Joey, we're best friends and you're my boss and you're the pastor of this church, and I love this church, and I wouldn't want to put it in a bad shape or anything. You'll be the first person that knows, but you're going, oh, I'm just thinking about it, wanting to make sure that you're okay, the church is okay, all this stuff. So that's kind of interesting.
But really, Joey's is all focused on people, and are they okay, and is this okay, and am I okay?
Right? I just,
you know, and that's not bad.
I admire the heck out of people.
Us?
Yes, that just can, for, like you were talking about, we talk about all sorts of people. They're just like, please don't bring me up on a Bad Christian Podcast. But the guy that we hired as kind of a temporary replacement for Andy, John,
yep,
exactly how you were describing him today. You're just like, I like having John around because he'll just go around saying, no, that's not right. We don't need that. Or, hey, why did that just happen? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
There is a part of me that just craves not to care what people
think.
And I think just don't have it.
I think it's worth working on.
It's worth bringing it somewhere in the middle.
I don't care. I mean, I do care.
Yeah, I think that there's certain people like myself that's not supposed to just be.
I understand that, but
totally,
all I'm saying is there's calculations to make, which is, does being sensitive to this person cost another person even?
Right.
But you would always gravitate towards the situation being better, for instance. So, for instance, if you were interviewing somebody on the podcast, you might be more likely to make sure that person's okay to the detriment of the 20,000 people listening to it.
Right.
So that wouldn't be the right choice, really, given the setup.
Right, unless it's super entertaining for people.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, I'm not saying being nice or sensitive to people is bad, but it's not primary. It's a thing you decide to do or not to do for certain reasons. But I really also don't understand, like, I'm going to cast even some more doubt in Joey's mind, because if you think about it, of course, I really believe Toby would and might leave the job. I really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm saying it to talk about, but I really don't see why, if endeavors that people were doing, anybody creatively, were successful enough, that you would keep your job. I'm not saying God can't call you to do it or all that stuff, sure. But there's, Toby, you had to admit, on a certain level of success of the podcast or band, you certainly would not have the job. you're just right now, and I'm like, nah, I got to do this. I got
to
do this.
I'm going to have to defend Toby on
if
this.
If we were making
he definitely has a sense of responsibility and care for
if
our
we
church.
If we make $1 million a year on the podcast and $500,000 a year on the band, Toby will not take a salary or be on staff at, after that time.
He wouldn't quit immediately.
Well, the, obviously, somewhere between now and then, he would.
I'm sure.
Right. So I'm saying you would. If your creative endeavors were enough, you wouldn't have your
stop fighting
job.
Over me, guys.
And the, re-
saying
the way
that if opportunity arose, I would be gone is what basically what he's saying. And
that's not bad.
But no, it's not bad. Maybe that's everybody. But what I think Joey's saying is, I feel like this is a different job where it would have to be a situation where I go, okay, I'm called somewhere else, if you want to use that terminology.
You have to use called language about church jobs. In and out. You have to be called in. You have to be called out.
You're right.
Of course not.
You're right. I won't say that. I would say if, literally, here's what I really do believe. If I wake up tomorrow and go, you know what? I don't think I can do my job the right way for Seacoast, then I would think I should quit.
Right.
I do think
okay,
that. Okay.
Right? I'm not saying you don't care about the people. I'm saying lead worship and go
right,
here.
Right. But
for free.
But I agree with you. If tomorrow, all of a sudden, I win the lottery and I have $10 million, just like any job, it'd be really interesting.
Not bad
to
if you
not,
had a TV pilot on for that you were writing.
Oh, yeah.
Of course you would leave and go do that full time.
Oh, you have something fell into my lap.
Or
like
grew.
That,
if you make 100,000 next year, 200 the next year, 300 the next year on graphic design and podcasting, you won't work here.
You're probably right, but I would still feel like I was doing something good for Seacoast too. Like
I'm not precluding that you could do anything good for them. Like give them enough money to pay for two more people's salaries.
Like right now, I think honestly, as crazy as it sounds, I think Bad Christian's a good thing. It was hilarious. A couple people we met on the road, they came to the Columbia show and they actually said, "Yeah, we found out about Seacoast through Bad Christian. It was awesome. We went to Inside Track, and the pastor said, how'd you hear about us?" We said, Bad Christian. They died laughing. Yeah. I was like, that's hilarious. That's...
Oh, they said that on road?
Yeah, yeah.
Road? That's the third time I've heard that.
I know. When we were in Columbia, they go to the Greenville campus now. So I think, here's the thing. I do like my job. I feel like I do it honorably. I feel secure in that. But you're right. If something fell in my lap where we're like, oh, man, so, we got to do something else, I probably would. But that might be anybody.
Yeah, of
might
course. Be something. It's not. I'm saying, it's not bad.
Right.
I'm just saying you have a job where you get paid from a church that you care about and like.
Cool.
And sure. Then if the things that you are doing creatively got big enough, anybody would do that.
I totally agree.
And
with
you're
you.
In some I middle totally ground. You actually use both incomes right now to make one income.
Right.
So I'll shift the numbers a little bit, and you won't work here. That doesn't mean anything bad. It just doesn't.
Or shift the numbers, and I work here and don't work for Bad Christian. But that's probably
fine too. Yeah, but I'm just saying that's all that is now. My plan to get you there, I tried before, I've convinced Devin, and we're going to do a bunch of shows next year with Devin.
Right.
So that shit might help us get on the right track. So we're going to be doing a bunch of acoustic shows with Devin. We're going to talk to him in a little bit. Yep. So that I think that might be part of the plan. But of now, I think we're going to be doing stuff that's even more fun, doing acoustic shows and stuff with Devin. And I am excited about doing that personally.
Ooh, acoustical shows.
And honestly, guys, I just so you know, if you want to follow my journey, I have a pay-only blog. It's called Toby Morrell, What's He Gonna Do? And it's pay-only. So
all right, let's take a break and then we'll talk to Devin some. See what's going on.
Man,
Joey,
before you even get started,
I need to tell you something.
No, let me tell you this.
I need to tell you something.
You have a lot of junk in the trunk, my friend. And I just want to say, it has not looked better than since you've been wearing MeUndies.
Well,
I promise, the junk in your trunk is held tight. It looks good.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking great.
I appreciate you noticing. I'm going to tell you that yesterday I was having such a great day, and you make fun of me for sometimes, you know, having my hands inside of my pants. But basically, it was basically it's because I wanted to feel the softness of MeUndies. And I'm telling you,
now it is soft.
I'm telling you, sometimes I just have to feel the softness, and I realize, man, I have been having a great day. Once you go to MeUndies, you cannot go back because it's just the quality of these underwear.
It's the world's most comfortable underwear.
I mean, it's
in the world.
It's crazy. So you got to be snug in all the right places. You got to look good. You got to feel good. And like Toby said, this is the most comfortable. And
the reason why is that micromodal fabric.
Right.
I had never heard of until MeUndies. That's how amazing it is.
Right. And the three of us, we're dudes, obviously. And so we're talking about this stuff from a dude's perspective. But my wife has MeUndies as well. She actually went out on her computer, ordered MeUndies, got the little percentage off here that we're going to be offering you here in a second.
What is the percentage? Go ahead and tell them.
She loves them too. It's 20% off your first order.
What?
So, I mean, we're talking, hey, do the math.
Go to MeUndies.com/BadChristian and get that 20%.
And the shipping is daggum free.
And no matter what, you're going to be satisfied because they have money-back guarantees on all their products.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, man, my wife likes how them things look on me.
Excellent. Oh.
It saved your marriage. MeUndies saved your marriage.
My sex life, my marriage, my everything.
MeUndies. Go there for 20% off your first order of the world's most comfortable underwear. Head to MeUndies.com/BadChristian right now. That is MeUndies.com/BadChristian.
All right, guys, let me tell you about Texture. In case you haven't got this through your head yet, in case you haven't done the free trial, listen to what I'm saying here. Texture is the app that gives you an all-access pass to the world's best magazines on your phone or tablet. I'm serious. There's hundreds of magazines that you know, magazines that you read, magazines that you used to buy at the store or subscribe to and have them come to your house. Magazines like Bon Appetit, Rolling Stone, 17, Motor Trend, the Food Network magazine. I'm talking real stuff here. I mean, everything. And so you get these things now on your tablet. What would be better than reading that on your iPad instead of getting mail sent to your house or going to the store to buy a magazine? Now, here's the other good thing about it that I really like is, my goodness, we read so much junk today on the internet and crappy articles and put blogs that somebody put together the night before. We're kind of missing a dose of well-written articles by professionals from these magazines. That is really, really good stuff. And you can just jump between all the ones and cherry pick the ones that you like the best. And the best part is Texture's offering our listeners a free trial right now. So go to texture.com/badchristian. Even better, give Texture as a gift. How about that? A gift between now and December 31st. So think about this. That's one present they'll open again and again and again. Every time they go read a magazine article on, you know, Road and Track magazine, they're going to think of you because you're the one that gave it to them. So great idea. Order this fantastic gift for you or a loved one by December 31st. Or try it for free right now when you go to texture.com/badchristian.
So have you been talking to anybody in Nashville, or you just want to get in the middle of it?
A little bit. Like, I wrote a few more country songs. I don't think I showed them to you. I should send them to you. And I just thought about that was what I would love to do as I get older. Like, I was
thinking, are we rolling now or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Say yeah, man. Dr. Technology doesn't know what's going on.
No, I didn't want to understand if we were rolling or not. I want to focus on Devin, but I'll tell you what, let's just focus on Toby for a while. Devin, go ahead and interview Toby.
All right, Toby. I thought you just wanted to be like casual.
No, I do. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're right.
Lord.
You're right. Back to your life.
Your agenda.
Okay, so you wrote.
First, I have a total confession. We set up this interview to do, and it is 9:09 p.m. and at 8:15 I was sound asleep.
Did I wake you up calling you?
Matt called me and I was like, I ain't answering that. What in the world? And so I let it ring. And then Matt called again. I was like, man, I made this video and sent it to Matt. I was like, man, he must have really liked it, but I'm not gonna talk to him. And then I was like, oh crap. We got to do this interview with Devin. So
you were asleep. You were asleep for the night, not dozing on the couch.
You were like out.
Well, yes, I was in my bed completely covered. Well, one thing, I threw my back out working out this morning. I've been working out pretty hardcore, and I was doing the bench, and I've been going up in weight, and I've been feeling really good, but something twisted, and the center of my back went out. And I thought I was going to pass out in the middle of Pivotal Fitness. And so I started, when you see an animal hurt, they kind of go off by themselves. I was like over in the corner. I was over in the corner trying to like stretch my back out. It was really a little bit scary. And then I stretched it out and it was okay. I did a little bit more and it loosened up a little bit, but it's just like a pull muscle or whatever. But yep. I don't know. I guess y'all pull muscle where it takes your breath away. Matt, your back has like a hinge or whatever. Like you pull it out and you can't even stand. Kind of felt like that. But anyway, so I had the Bengay all over my back and was just trying to lay down, go to sleep early. And then I realized we were supposed to do this. So, yeah, Jess and I want to go up to Nashville to see if we ever would want to move there. I would like to get into, as I get older, I feel like I could still write songs into my late 80s or 90s. Mm-hmm. So I probably won't be I won't be jumping around doing music and stuff. So right. I think I mean jumping around on stage singing and performing, but I can write music, so I think that's what I would like to do. So you never know.
So you're just thinking songwriting and stuff though.
Yeah, that's what I would like to do. I've been doing a lot of it, and even doing it for Emery and for, you know, Matt and Toby. And I mean, you guys know we're the three dudes in the world. You two are the two dudes I wrote music with a majority of my life, a big chunk of my life. So it's fun to write music. I think that's the one of my favorite things about music is getting to write it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree. Yeah, and so now we're all three mature people. We're going to spread our wings and go our own way. Is that what we're going to do?
No, we're back.
Well, what I got to know is about Devin being back. So, I mean, like, Devin, you're seriously talking about being figuring out a way to actually be some form of back as a as an artist in 2016 or something. That's what it sounds like to me.
That's what I'd like to do. I mean, I've definitely, I guess it's been over the past maybe 6-8 months that I've kind of had the itch again.
Mm-hmm.
Not to really, you know, be full on back in the scene or anything, but just I haven't really gotten to write any music. I've just kind of been doing my job, and I enjoy that and everything, but it's just like, ah, man, I kind of wish I was back in the mix a little bit.
Well, what's what's the itch though? Is it working with other people? Obviously it's not primarily travel that you miss, but so what is the itch?
Yeah, I miss writing. I miss writing with you guys. Mm-hmm. I miss being a part of it. You know what I mean? Like, even though I did the last album vocals and stuff, you know, you guys wrote all the music, which was great and all that, but it was just kind of like, oh yeah, add my little twist to it or whatever.
So you would have liked to have been even more involved in the writing. Once you got in the studio and then started doing the singing and stuff, like, because you weren't asking like, oh, let me write. You weren't sending me demos or anything.
Yeah.
But once you got in there and heard the songs that we had been doing and you got to participate, at that point you wished you had been even more involved.
Yeah, I think so a little bit. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't feel envious or anything, but it just kind of gave me that desire a little bit more again. Like, oh man, I wish I would have been a part of that. Yeah. Process a little bit.
Yeah, so. I remember Devin would text me and be like, man, I love this song. I wouldn't have done that bridge. I could have come up with something real cool instead of that. But yeah, man, great song.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, he sent me a bunch of demos and said, forward these to Toby. I trashed every one of them.
You son of a bitch.
Well, but one thing too. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, but you do, like, for instance, we did an acoustic show a while back, and so... Yeah. And that was, to me, that was the thing that I really thought, like, that was the most fun I've had playing music in so long. We did one person bought a thing where we come to their house and do a private show for a crowdfund, and you were able to go to that.
Yeah.
So we showed up, went to your house, practiced one day, and then me, you, Toby, and Dave played acoustic, and it was the most fun I've had playing music in years. It really was, because I've been enjoying our VIP sets when Toby and me and Toby playing in living rooms acoustic, but we were able to do that and play old Emery songs and play with you. I really have not had a better time at all. So that's kind of where I'm at. Like, that's what I want. I really, really want to do that this year. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, that was definitely part of it when you guys got to come to the house and we got to hang out for a couple of days, and then just kind of it's just a lot of fun because it just kind of falls right back into place how we just kind of practice and we know what to do. We know what's going on. It's real comfortable. And it was like not even like hard work at all. It was just like, man, this is super easy, super fun. And that was actually the night that we kind of talked about some of the potential like acoustic touring type things. And I was like, man, if we could do that and it'd be, you know, fun and successful, then I would definitely try my best to be on board for that. So
did you enjoy that
changed
show?
Us all. That was just like the so fun. Man, you had too much fun actually at that show.
Yeah, too much at that
just,
show.
Just playing. The next day was a living nightmare for Matt.
I remember seeing Toby downstairs by himself like all day long. I was like, are you going to do anything, man? He's like, nah, man.
I was not sleeping at all.
Just sitting in Devin's basement after an awesome show. That show was so fun, though, because y'all are exactly right. It felt like, oh, this is it. Like, this. Oh, yeah, I remember. It's really fun. Like, we've been doing this, and we are good at this. Like, you know what I mean? It felt like all of us – you're right. It didn't even feel like – that hard of work. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember. We can do this song.
It's Devin, like the most effortless, best sounding thing to me. And because Toby and I worked together really well in that way that we've gone, we did on the Break It Down, went through that, how it's super, how we're super complimentary or different. But on the other hand, Devin and I have overlapping skills and language and stuff that is, I mean, Devin and I have been doing music together since high school. Mm-hmm. Since before either of us knew anything about music theory, and we're listening to the same bands and writing music together and learn music theory together and how to play and do all that. And so there's, I mean, communicating with Devin is, with Toby, it's very difficult even to this day. And there's some good outcomes to that. But communicating with Devin and doing music, there's absolutely no way, nobody on the planet that's easier for me to work with musically than Devin by at all, like in a million years. So that was so, it was so automatic. Plus, I don't know if you feel this way, Devin, but I feel like we weren't that good in 2001 and 2. I wasn't very good. I didn't have good timing. I wasn't that great at music. And now I'm a lot better at it. So less input work and better sounding output. And then working with the people that I'm best with that know me the best, that's just like, it's pretty unbelievable feeling to me.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. It's honest. The way it felt to me is like you said, early on, it was like, yeah, we were decent musicians learning. And it was more about the excitement, more about the feeling of the band rather than maybe even the talent necessarily. I mean, we had that going for us.
It was hard, but though. Now, we had to work really hard to sound good, and we still didn't sound good.
Before the first album and before tours, I mean, we would practice hours a day, you know, or whatever. And I felt like now, what it felt like to me was like kind of seasoned musicians just kind of getting together and just playing what they play, and they're just good at it. You know what I mean? That's just kind of what it felt like.
Right.
And not to mention all the years that we've done it together, it just made it that much easier. So, and go ahead.
I was going to say, I think just the cool thing about it was too that we didn't. Yeah, y'all hear me?
Yep. Sounds fine to me.
You hear me, Devin?
Devin, got us?
I can hear you now. I was frozen for a minute there.
All right.
Oh, sorry. Am I back now?
Yep. Sounds good.
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. I was going to say, I think one thing too was when's the last time we've all played an acoustic show together? You know what I mean? And so, like, I think sometimes for us, as we've gotten older, the weight of, okay, all the equipment, the sound, what's it going to be like? You're showing up somewhere. Like when we do one-off festivals, you're always still like either you're outdoors, the sound's going to be weird. You got to do a sound check. You don't know what it's going to be like. Are you going to be able to hear yourself? All that stuff. Just sitting there with an acoustic guitar is so natural and so clean and clear. And, I mean, I'll even toot our own horns. Devin and I sing pretty well and really well together. And it just fits so nice. I just feel like the best of our musical skills are showcased in that.
Sure.
That it always sounds like that's the best. Like we did that one acoustic tour, man, it's been how many years ago? Forever ago. And that was like one of my all-time favorite tours musically because it was really fun. You can just showcase everything. You can hear everything, and everything sounds so good.
Well, what even about in a garage. People, I mean, do you think people, you know, get that or like that? Or like, because I remember doing that when we did an acoustic tour, it felt like this off thing to do. So it was about half the size of amount of people in attendance. But that was kind of when we were at more of our peak for being loud and we were younger and the crowd was younger. Do you think it's possible now that even more percentage of people would enjoy hearing us do a well-done acoustic thing like we're going to do? I think so.
I would think more, you know, I would think more than, you know, would 5-10 years ago because that's no longer really, I mean, the style's, you know, still there, but it's like, it's kind of outlived its time to a certain degree. So I think especially the fans who've kind of followed us throughout time, they probably enjoy seeing the live high energy shows. But
they've
all
seen that 10 times anyway.
Yeah. So I think they would love to see a super high quality, really clean sounding acoustic show. That'd probably be the highlight.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if people don't know this yet because we're just announcing it, I guess, here on this thing. But what we're going to do is spend 2016 try to figure out how to do more shows with Devin. I don't know what it looks like yet. But what we do know is that in January, we're going to do 3 shows. We're going to play, it looks like, on the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. Some details to come. But I wrote down some notes on how to describe it. And I'm saying that it's going to be an evening with Matt and Toby and Devin, I said that it'll be exclusive, like an intimate performance where we do storytelling and we're going to hang out kind of thing. Not sure exactly what that'll look like yet. But, you know, it'll be hanging out with us and we'll talk about the songs. We'll play a bunch of songs and it'll be like a full band kind of thing. I'm not sure if Josh or Dave will be there or not because Dave's having a baby and I'm not sure if Josh can make it or not. But yeah, at least the three of us will be there and we will have a drummer. It might be Dave, at least that. And so we're going to play stuff from all the albums, songs we've never played before together, and we'll play some new stuff. Does that work for you, Devin, if we play some new songs of yours or new songs of mine and Toby's or new Emery songs?
Yeah, that'd be great.
You have some new stuff, right? If we worked on it, we could do it.
Yeah, I got several songs.
So, so I'm thinking we'll sell. I mean, I think we'll put it in basements or private spaces or coffee shops, something where it would sell about 50, maybe living it to 50 or 75 or 40 people could go, like real private kind of thing. Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that sounds perfect to me. I mean, I don't, because you guys have done a lot of house shows over the past few years. So, I mean, seems like that, and I've done a few, but I mean, it seems like that's a good feeling. You know, I mean, it's a good set for that sort of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really good. I want this to be even more special, even than a living room show. That this is like a, I don't know. This is, as of right now, it's a one of a kind thing you can do. So I think it's pretty special. But yeah, it may be in living. I'm not sure what the venue will be, but I know when we do VIP stuff, special stuff, exclusive stuff that only 10 people can go to or only 50 people can go to, it's more fun and it's more rewarding to everybody that's there. So that's the way I want to tailor it. So we'll get the details worked out. It'll have to be a little bit more expensive than usual. It might be $50 or something like that. But I think that'll work. I hope it does, at least. It's kind of an experiment for us. But
yeah, I think we should just try it. I think the cool thing about it is, it'll be an intimate setting where you can get to see Devin again, which, I mean, most likely a full tour might not ever happen with Devin again. So we're going to do like three shows in a row, and then Devin has to go back to real life, and so do we. And so I think this is a really cool opportunity to play these songs in a way that people haven't heard them. And what's really cool about, you know, I guess playing songs unplugged is you get to hear the real strength of the song too. It's not just like, what was the guy you say? Nobody's a good guitar player. If you're not a good guitar player, just use distortion or something like this. Right, you get to actually see the strength of the song. Ask questions, find out what's going on. You can talk to us about Bad Christian. You can talk to Devin about what he's doing. You're going to get to hear new songs. I think it's really fun. We love hanging out and just talking with people and making a night of it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I kind of think of it just like as a party.
It's like a party. That's exactly right. Yeah. Like it's a party that we host or co-host with somebody. And then the people that care the most about what we do, if there's anybody, maybe nobody buys a ticket for all I know, but experience tells me there's X amount of people. I think it might be 50, 40, 70 amount of people that will gobble these tickets up pretty quickly and get to come to that party, a special thing that we do. But I don't know if we've totally decided, but it looks like we're going to do somewhere like Texas. Does that sound right to y'all?
Let's start it in Texas. I think
that'd be great.
And so I know, I mean, you got to get an inside look here. It's kind of arbitrary. We've been discussing it on text threads and stuff. Should we go to California? We just do it in Seattle. We need to do it where it's close to Devin or go to our best markets or whatever. But we've had some really good shows there. So if we're going to test this thing out and try it, we just, you know, maybe as arbitrary as it may be, I think we've selected, we're going to start and just like do Dallas and a couple of markets near there. So,
yeah, that sounds great. I always love playing Texas anyway. I mean, it's just a great place.
Yeah. So speaking of talking about what Devin's doing and stuff like that, Devin, it's not just this that you're doing. Like you're really getting serious here. You're going to put out a new record.
Yeah.
This year.
That's, yeah. Or, I mean, that 2016. Well, next year, yeah. Yeah. That's my plan. I mean, I guess it was probably a couple months ago. Maybe I texted you and just kind of started sending you a few like really rough demo ideas and said, hey, I just feel like I don't know, I just really want to. And there's a part of me that's like, man, I'm kind of anxious. I'm kind of a little nervous just because, you know, I haven't done it in a while and, you know, I want the songs to be really good. And so I'm a little bit on that side of things, but I'm also like super excited because I haven't done it in probably 4 years. I mean, it's been that long since I've written consistently. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like I kind of want to establish not just myself as like a particular type of musician, but I feel like compared to you and Toby and the band as a whole, I mean, you know, we always talk about, you know, our styles are a little different. Like, I just feel like I kind of have a style that I kind of want to go for and establish as
what style
as
is
me.
It?
I love R&B. I love just that real mellow kind of feel, smoothness to it, mm-hmm. but also kind of like the acoustic, like almost folky to some degree. So I'm not sure how it'll work itself out, but somewhere in that zone, I mean, somewhere of like just a feel good kind of
smooth.
I guess that's the best way to describe it. Just kind of a, I don't know, just something you can listen to while you're driving down the interstate. You know what I mean?
Toby.
kind of like an American Psy Gangnam Style kind of thing.
Exactly.
Opium Devin style.
So that's the thing that's the thing that Devin has is the smoothness and the whatever that is. That Toby, if you do a solo record in your style, you don't ever get described as smooth, do you?
No, I never have. not since about a year after Screaming in Emory. Used to have a voice of an angel, and now it's just gravel, just a jar full of gravel.
Hey man, I don't know the end of. Well, I just forgot the name of the song. End of. Well, it was called Thrash.
That's smooth.
Yeah.
End of that. I mean, you could pull that an album like that off, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people have talked to me about doing that, like a 50s, 60s soul thing. I don't know. Yeah. I will be coming up. I am going to do a solo album, but there's a bunch of different things.
What year are you planning on? Like 2019, 2042? What is it going to be?
I was thinking 2022. Get the kids out of the house. Yep. Really bear down, knuckle down.
What do you got, a two-year-old now? Once you get her out of the house, you'll be wide open to write songs, right?
Hey, speaking of kids, I know I will get back to it, but I had like a son-to-dad moment today where it was like my son came to me as a man and looked me in the face. He got into unbelievable trouble because we were at Dick's Sporting Goods. He just picked up a piece of candy off the floor and just started eating it. And it's just a gross piece of candy. And I was like, Ike, do not do that. Spit that out. And he was like, son, no. I was like, you cannot do that. I said, it's really dirty. I don't know if that was medicine. I couldn't tell. It might have been like an actual cough drop or something like that. I was like, don't do that. And he sat in the back and he pouted all the way home. And then everybody got out of the car and I unbuckled him last. And he came around and he looked at me and said, Dad, sorry I ate that candy. I was like, it's okay, son. I said, I just don't want you to do that because I love you. I don't want you to get sick. And he was like, I'm sorry, Dad. And I was like, it's okay. He's four years old and I had that dad moment. Like, Dad, I got to talk to you. He pulled me to the side.
You guys have a long, real long hug after that, you know?
Yeah, actually we did.
Well, so I was gonna say, well, I don't remember where we were at before that. Devin's record, doing Devin's shows. Music.
Yeah, Matt, when you gonna come out with a solo record? If I'm coming out,
your vocals, man.
You know what? You know what? I am kind of in you guys' territory now because what is this? This Sunday, I imagine you guys are leading worship at church, right? It's almost Christmas Sunday. You're doing all the Christmas songs. Yeah. Well, guess what? I am too, brothers.
You're leading worship.
Yeah. I mean, what are the biggest days of the year for Christianity in church? Easter. Yeah.
Easter.
And maybe second biggest would be
probably Christmas.
I would
probably
say Christmas Eve. Christmas, you know, the Sunday of Christmas when, you know, it's like the biggest thing of the year. Anyway, I got the call. That's me.
You got it.
Yeah. So, you know,
you're playing by yourself?
Second biggest day of the year, I get the call. I'm leading worship at my church too. So, whatever. So I'm in the club.
Are you just going to play by yourself with an acoustic or are you putting a band together?
I did by myself with acoustic last time. And this time I'm bringing a girl named Kayla who's really good just for backup because the significance of the date. You know, so I'll have a little bit of backup there. Or she'll probably sing a little more than I do. But anyway.
Well, see, at our church, we do, Devin, you might do the same. We do, our big day is Christmas Eve. We can't ever get off. I'm never off for Christmas Eve. That's the most worked day. We do three services Christmas Eve.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Right before we got on this interview, we were just talking. Devin doesn't know this, but we were just
talking to Joey, and we've just been back through the ringer on the thing where I'm busting Toby's chops on why he needs to do stuff like write more songs, do more stuff, write more music, move to Nashville, whatever he's got to do. Because somebody like you're a worship leader, Toby's a worship leader. And my, what I keep telling them is, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I'm saying if you guys are as talented and as creative as you are, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to do that those things for a living. And I don't know, I could be wrong. Maybe you would prefer not to do creative endeavors and your own stuff for a living. But what I'm wondering is if you guys could figure it out, if you could, Devin, we've talked to Toby enough about it, but if you could, if you putting out solo records and doing shows on your terms and doing stuff that was creative where you it's about you, would you do that instead of your church job? Would you, like, if you were making X amount of money and had enough control and were enjoying it, and even if you, whatever it may be, whether it's graphic design or making videos or acting, making music, playing shows with us, podcasting, wouldn't you do that?
I know what my dad would say. He would say, it doesn't matter. You can't never make enough money with that Obamacare.
Yep. You got to get your own health insurance.
Well, once we get Trump in there, we should be all right. You know?
Yeah, once we get Trump in there, I'll start writing unbelievable songs. It's going to be amazing.
We're going to get rich. I guess I would. I mean, I don't.
I like asking the question because there's a taboo element to it.
Yeah,
I understand because people get – here's all I'm trying to point out. People get super weird about church jobs. Like they act like, uh-oh, I can't say. But anybody in any other job anywhere else would always say, oh, well, yeah, if my tattoo career took off or my anything career took off, whatever my thing was, of course I would leave this job. That's what everybody would ever say. But with church, I find people get a little squirrely about it. I'm wondering your opinion.
No, I don't think I have that feeling at all. I mean, if I had, I really do like the job, and I really do appreciate the job. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but there's obviously things about it I'm like, well, this kind of sucks.
Do you think it's a I mean, do you differentiate from it being a job and a calling?
No, not at all. I really don't.
So you don't think your worship leading job at your church at all is a calling?
No. I'm serious.
That's awesome. Toby won't get near saying that, by the way. But thank you, Devin. That's
I will. I think it's a job. I don't know if I'm called to be a worship leader. I don't know that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly never thought I'd work at a church. It was no real reason, I guess. I never liked the idea of it.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think of it as a job. I mean, but obviously there's responsibility in it that's different than other jobs. So I get that. But for me, it's like, you know, it's just, I mean, it's just kind of how it worked out after the band. I mean, if there had been, I think it's great and I'm glad it worked out that way. But I'm saying if there was another opportunity with music that I could have done something similar to what I was doing.
Yeah.
Then I would have probably done that too. It's not like I said, oh man, God's really calling me to be a worship minister. I don't think that at all. I mean, I think he put me in that place for a particular reason, but he could have put me anywhere. It'd have been the same. You know what I'm saying?
As any job.
To me,
mm-hmm.
I mean, personally, I don't think it's, yeah. I mean, I guess that's just.
Yeah, I would say even, I think that's a good thing. Like we had a guy come, it's like, I forget his name. I think his name's Chris Hodges. I'm probably butchering that. But he's like one of the biggest churches in Alabama. They're a massive mega church, one of the fastest growing churches in America, if not the world. And he actually said that this is a job and your job isn't, in most instances, it's not to share the gospel. It's actually to facilitate it so the gospel is shared. Like, you actually have a job to do. And I like looking at it that way because that actually makes me take the job of worship leading more seriously. Like, it is a job. Like, I want to do well and succeed, and I have, bosses and people looking at me and counting on me to do a good job. So I like looking at it that way, too. And I don't think I look at it as a calling necessarily. I mean, maybe it could be, but I think if it was, then I would say that. I think I would go, oh yeah, it's a calling. That's what I'd want to do the rest of my life and be a worship leader and all those things. I think that I have skills that God gave me that work well with worship leading.
Yeah.
But I agree. You're right. I think anybody in the world would, I mean, maybe even pastors, if there was a way to do something else that they felt was really important or their desire, or maybe they even would. I think that's fine. I don't think that's bad. I don't think that's talking negative at all about my job right now. I'm the same way as Devin.
Well, so then is it reasonable for me to try to convince you guys that you guys are talented, and if you put in the time or lived off of savings for X amount of time, if you really wanted to design your career, because I work a lot with other artists and bands, you know, King's Kaleidoscope and Matt McDonald and other bands I work with, and the pitch I'm always giving to them is – listen, things are different than they've ever been. You can custom design your own career now if you have some following, if you're talented enough. And I know people that are less talented than you guys. I'm not talking about Matt McDonald and Chad Gardner, but I know people that are less talented than you guys that have less following that are making their careers. And it's about risk and reward, of course. There's risk involved, but, you know, I feel like are your church jobs safe ways to – you know, just to have medical insurance or tell people a good job or should Toby move to Nashville and should you, you know, like go all in and see? Because I don't have another job. And so my wife has a good job. That's something. I can't deny that at all. But if she lost her job, I don't think I would change my course very much. I would live off savings for time. And I believe that you can be, and I would actually feel like I am successful. I mean, and I feel very comfortable in that. So,
well, part of me, I mean, I'll be totally honest about it. I mean, I feel like, well, this is a really good job like that I have now. So I'm like, it pays pretty well for what it is and I have good benefits and all that stuff. And so I'm like, man, it'd be kind of stupid for me to stop doing that job and take a big risk to do something else. Unless it was kind of like already set up to go, so.
But it's not. What's the risk, though? I mean, I'm not trying to push back, but not making as much money. But your wife has a good job. You wouldn't be in any financial jeopardy if you didn't earn a paycheck for even 6 months.
But it's not like my wife is totally like okay with me just quitting my job.
Right.
Hopefully it works out.
Now that's a different issue for sure. And I respect.
Babe, I want to make art.
I agree because I mean, wouldn't the worst thing be not that we have less money, but I'm some deadbeat loser that hangs out in my basement, says I'm going to make it or have a career, and your wife's bringing home the paycheck. That's way worse than having less money. Like to be viewed that way and to feel that way about yourself.
I don't think I would ever allow myself to do that without really working hard to make it happen. But it's a safe kind of feeling. It's like, oh yeah, I have a really good job. I can still do a little bit of something. I still get to do kind of creative stuff that I enjoy doing. So it's a little bit of a safe kind of feeling that I have. And I'm like, oh yeah, well, I don't want to jeopardize some of that safety. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like you said, I mean, if it is a possibility to actually make a legitimate career out of doing music in a different way than we used to.
Yeah.
That's something I would definitely look to. I mean, I'm always going to be a part of, personally, I'm always going to be a part of a church. I'm probably always going to serve at a church. I'm always going to help with music at a church. And if I can make my living elsewhere or doing music elsewhere and still just do that, that's fine with me too. So it's not like I'm necessarily tied to doing that as my job for a church. Sometimes sometimes I feel a little silly. I'm serious. Sometimes I feel a little bit silly even working at a church. Sometimes I feel some people will ask me like, so is that your job? And I'll say, yeah. And they say, oh, is it full time? And I'll be like, yeah, it's full time. And they'll be like, oh, so it's just funny because people outside of the church, they don't even hardly grasp sometimes that church offers full-time positions, maybe apart from like the actual senior pastor or whatever. I'm like, yeah, it actually is a job.
It's crazy though there's tons of churches that don't have worship leaders. It's just the worst person ever with the guitar doing the worst thing ever possible.
Which is
what my church is going to get on Sunday, by the way.
Yeah, but, that's exactly what they're getting for Christmas. Hold on, let me add to what Devin's saying. I think one thing too is working at a church is a good job. Like I went to work every day this week and it was fun. Like I worked with Joey, the people and staff are really cool and it is a great job. So that safety there too is I'm thinking, well, I have a great job. Am I being stupid by like what Devin said? Yeah. Why there's nothing about the job that I really totally dislike. Of course, there's some things that I would like to implement in general, like we talk about on Bad Christian at our church that would change, you know, the way church is done. But that's just me. And I have to, you know, kind of think, am I right in those things? And the church allows us to do Bad Christian. The church allows me to tour with Emory. The church allows me to do all kinds of things. So, and sometimes I think, well, I am going to be 40 in March. And Matt's saying, hey, go write a song. And I'm like, maybe my friend Matt's a dumbass. this church job, I got tons of friends. They all love me. When, you know, they all think it's cool. They always say something. Oh, I had a friend that loves Emory, man. That's so, and I, you know, I hear that, you know, once every few weeks, and I'm like this. And so part of that safety is, here's the thing that I think, the safety also, even though it's so good, it does hinder me from being as creative because I don't have to be. Tonight, my back kind of hurt. I was like, yeah, I was going to work on a song tonight. I was like, I'm not going to go out to the garage and do that. I'm just going to read a book and get in my warm bed, and it's going to be cool because I have a great job and a great life right now. That safety there too slows down a little bit of the creativity because life is really good. The job is so good that it kind of keeps you there. Like we did just filled out our benefits package for the next year and all this stuff. I mean, the church really does take care of you, and it does require a lot of time. I do work a 40-hour week and do three different separate jobs. Devin's church is killer. I do not only worship, but I do small groups and outreach. And so the thing is, it is a good job, so I wouldn't want to just cast that to the side. And I agree with Devin, it's not a calling, but also I feel an obligation to. I wouldn't just up and quit this job. Now, if it was just a regular, normal job, but people are counting on me and appreciate me and see me as a leader in the church, I wouldn't just throw in a 2 weeks' notice.
Sure.
It's not a job like that, for sure. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. I'd want the church to be in great shape and not need me.
Yeah.
What's cool about it is I'm not hearing anything about money, really. So I think it was obvious for the kinds of abilities that we have and things that we do that money isn't the primary thing. So that's already apparent. But let's just talk. Let's put it hypothetical this way. What if your church job paid like $150,000 a year benefits and everything? Would that put to bed any creativity? Like,
I'd have stayed asleep tonight. Right? Trust me, I wouldn't have been on this thing. Luckily, our church is really my church does not care.
So then you have on the table. Let's say you had a cush job where all you do is you go to a big church, you look good on stage, you have a band leader, maybe even that helps you, and you sing and you just do the music and you make it as good as you can. That's it, and this pays $100,000+ a year.
Yeah.
Okay. Or
that happens.
Yeah, I know it happens. Or
I could have applied for a job. I mean, and just this is retard. We're not supposed to say the R word.
You can say
talked about that. Dumbass me. Where it was seriously it's in the middle of nowhere, and the job was paying like $70,000 or $80,000 a year plus a living stipend of another 10 or something like that. And I was like, well, and it would have been doing less than I do at my job.
Right. Well, that sounds insane to me. But let's say you had $140,000+ benefits, cush church job, or you could make $95,000 cumulative dollars doing Emory, Bad Christian, your solo record, you're traveling. Mm-hmm. 15 weeks a year. Which would you do? I'm just curious. Neither of those numbers are realistic.
I don't have an answer because that's what I'm trying to figure out right now. Yeah. Is it that the other thing about it too is talking about the safety stuff. The other job, there is hustle there, and you are away from your family, and you are, you know, there are things.
Wait, but I'm saying you couldn't answer those two even. Like what I'm saying is you don't care about money. So I would think clearly you would take the less money. Like it's still plenty of money, $95,000 a year. And you're doing your thing. You would take less money to do your thing if it was still enough money? That's my question.
What I'm saying right now, I work at least for me, my job does require a lot of time and it keeps me busy a ton. Even when we're on the road, I'm doing work from the bus and stuff like that.
Yep.
But what I'm saying, it isn't about the money for me. Right. I know that God's going to take care of me and all that stuff. So the money, regardless, if both of them are the same, both still have are interesting to me. But if you're saying that there's a $140,000 job that's just that, I would feel like I couldn't take that one because that would feel like I would just be doing it.
I think you would feel super weird about that.
I would just be doing that for the money, I think.
That's right.
In fact, if I worked at any other church besides Seacoast, I would be worried right now, today, that I would be doing it for the money. Right. If I left Seacoast, it would, you know.
Right, because that's what I'm saying. You could think, what I don't understand is, on the other hand, you guys could climb – the worship leader ladder. Be ambitious. Mm-hmm. And you could be right. have frosted tips and be at the biggest church in one of the biggest churches in the world. You know, you could set your eyes on that and just really play the game and be able to make top dollar. But you guys aren't ambitious to do that.
No.
Not to make money that way.
Or even to be a more prominent worship leader. You don't have that goal. But with our albums, you want to sell more. With our podcast, you want it to grow. With your church jobs, you guys seem content versus ambitious.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious.
I think in the church world, though, the music that you would create is pretty in a box. I mean, you're not going to be that successful unless you write a certain way.
Yeah, it'd be less satisfying. And I'd say that because I think about this a ton. I talk to worship leaders, and you know, I think about it a lot. But it's a difficult place to be a worship leader because it's like one of the only other jobs where you can be a professional musician other than writing your own music. Except for the box is very small, and so people get burnt out and they have a hard time. It's a weird job.
Yeah, I think church creates burnout for sure. In every position.
Yeah, it does. What I was going to say was I have a little bit of a kind of a tug of war sometimes within myself because I really do enjoy being creative. But as you guys know, it's pretty hard. Like, I mean, you have to create something from nothing.
Yep.
Right.
So it's difficult at times. And sometimes I kind of have this feeling of like life is it's on an easy stretch. You know, like things are good. It's not real stressful. And I don't have to create something.
Right.
I know it might sound funny, but I don't have to. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's kind of nice that I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
But I also have that drive and desire to create stuff. So sometimes I have a little bit of this weird, like, tug of war going on. Like, man, I really do want to, but it's time consuming. It's really hard. It's and plus, you're saying, like, on top of my current full-time job and two little kids – and all that stuff, it's like, man, I really have a hard time finding time to create. And I still have this desire to do it. You know what I mean? It's just kind of overwhelms.
It's really interesting to me. I mean, well, I had to confess the same to me. I don't have even another job. And I do business stuff a lot, and I do podcasts a lot. The hardest thing for me to do is to clear out space and spend time creating music. That is the hardest thing for me, and I don't even have a regular job, and it's still the hardest thing for me to spend 6 hours on or 4 hours on. I don't do it. Like, I wish I did it too. So, you know, that's one of the hardest things. That's why I think Toby's in an interesting space because he's trying to push into writing like songs and song clips, you know, multiple times a week or daily. So I think that's the right track, is to like get the muscle there to where you make, you know, clear out the space and make sure you write something every week or something like that.
I think I'm different than you guys. Like, I can create something super quick.
Grab your guitar. Let's do one right now. The other day, it's right behind you. Not good.
I'm 1 foot in the bed right now, so I don't, half my brain isn't working. But I think I can, where I get, what's funny about you two is like, I can create something like just immediately. But when I feel pressure is when somebody goes, "Ooh, that's good. Let's make a song." Then I'm like, "Oh, I have to do all of it now." You know what I mean? Like, I love just creating. And then where I love working with you guys, and what makes it really fun is once I get an idea and y'all go, "Oh, yeah, this is good," then y'all help me complete it, and that's what's really nice. Like, I feel pressure. I can create songs and write, you know, a majority of a song. I could probably write 5 or 6 songs, maybe even a day. It just comes really naturally to me. But if somebody says it's good, now let's record it and make it the song, then I feel this weird pressure of like, oh, everything has to be right. And so I start avoiding it almost, I think.
Yeah.
Which is really crazy, but that's the way my brain works, which is why I think I work so well with you guys, because y'all don't have any fear of that. You're like, oh, yeah, we have a song. Cool.
Easy.
Let's finish it.
Yeah, that's
the easy. Finishing is what y'all love, and that part seems sometimes a little overwhelming to me. So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, finding the nugget is the hard part, like finding the inspiration moment. But you pull them, just, you know, you just deal cards out of the deck.
Well, also when y'all bring a song, they're like, "Matt, when you bring a song to me, I can really finish that." But I think when it's my own song, there's a little bit of identity there where what I'm saying is I feel like I have to work forever to make it. I feel a weight of, oh, man, I'm going to work on this song for a while has to be great.
But you just have a deck of 52 cards and you just, you know, shit out great ideas constantly with no effort. And so for you, it's diminishing returns to say, oh, I could have five more good ideas, or I could work on the one good idea for hours and hours and hours.
Right.
So that would, of course, be frustrating. Whereas if I can find the inspiration or the good thing, I mean, I can tune that thing up and work on it and make sure there's nothing lacking. And it's just a matter, that's just a matter of spending time. That's the easy part, really.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is I can do that with other people's songs too. Or like, Matt, you send me music and I get excited and I know, ooh, I can write lyrics this way, and I get a melody and all that stuff. I think when it's my own song, I write the music and the lyrics, my identity gets wrapped up and then I go, it has to be perfect or else it won't be good at all.
Well, collaboration is definitely the bouncing, and the collaboration is definitely the antidote for that problem for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we've been on this thing a long time.
Yeah.
I'm ready. Devin, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah.
Hey, this tour is going to be awesome. I am really looking forward to it. It's going
to
be really fun.
Doing these shows. It's going to be really good. Yeah, I mean, doing the new album, we'll play songs from the new album. It makes me realize something that, you know, the biggest mistake Emery ever did, obviously everybody always would say, the lamentful R. Pinkerton, the I'm only a man. Well, that wasn't the problem. It was that damn we do what we want without Devin. Yeah. That was our big misstep. That was the problem.
It was I'm only a man until we do what we want.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's the
well, what's cool too is I think a lot of people don't. I mean, because we've been doing Bad Christian, and Matt and I talk our asses off, and we've done living room tours and all that stuff. What's going to be really cool is people getting to see and experience more of Devin's personality. Because honestly, in the band, you're one of the biggest talkers. I mean, we used to sit in the bus and talk. As much as anybody. And I think a lot of people will get to hear, and you get your take on questions and stuff. And you see the world and faith sometimes differently than Matt and I do. Mostly alike, but sometimes different. I think that's going to be a cool part of the show too.
You're right about that.
First of all, getting to see Devin back and us singing those parts together, like they were always intended to be, is going to be really cool. But also just getting to ask questions and hang out and talk, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's funny because it's ping pong whenever we do stuff now. If there's even if all of Emery's there, it's like Andy playing bass or something, and Josh and Dave. Yeah. So no matter what, every single social situation with the band is ping pong between Toby and I. That's it.
Right.
There's no way anybody else is going to talk or carry a single moment of social interaction at all. But when Devin's there, if Toby talks for a second, and as soon as he closes his mouth, normally I go, okay, well, I'm going to have to talk at this exact second. But when Devin's there, it's like, there's going to be even more people to talk and carry the social interactions.
Yeah. He's basically like a better looking, way funnier, way more intelligent Joey.
Right.
That's what I've been told.
All right. Well, Devin, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. Everybody pay attention. We're going to be out there. We're going to, everybody fly to Texas, buy these shows, make sure this thing works out. Hopefully it's kind of an experiment, but if it works, I promise you we'll do it. And I don't actually want you guys to buy plane tickets and fly, but anybody in the driving distance, come to it. And if it works, we'll do it. We'll do it more. We'll go to more markets. Sound good to you, Devin?
Yeah, it sounds great.
All right.
Love it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, Devin Shelton. He's even handsome through audio.
What I mean?
I'm excited about this. It was sad that Devin left, but I was like,
we're winning him back.
Yeah, well, yeah, we are.
We're working him back in.
That's right. But now he's older, and I can, in the looks department, I feel like I can compete a little bit more because I'm getting in shape.
And he's really
he's a
lost
dad.
It, yeah.
He's a dad. He's
really out of shape.
Yeah, he's actually a piece of shit right now, looks-wise. He might get it, though. Yeah. He's the golden child, so he could probably work out for one day and look better than me. But isn't that terrible? That's really true. Like, he might actually could work out.
He could put on muscle very easily.
Oh, the easiest I've ever seen in my life. It's unbelievable.
Take a deep breath.
Yep.
Devin's gone.
I'm
going to roll. Just,
I don't
you
have
don't
to,
have to compete. He's gone. And you're the focus.
Is
you're
my brain
star.
Not working?
You're the star.
I don't have enough glucose in my brain. It's not working, guys.
Take a deep breath, and I'm going to roll your music.
Hey, can I try to... Can I try to do the intro in German for our German listeners? No, I want to.
Don't you have your own podcast?
Hey, could you, Joey? Could you just actually infiltrate that other podcast that we heard earlier, and just say, "Hey, listen, those Matt and Toby, they forced me to do this stuff. I'm on your guys' side. I just want to come on your podcast.
Like, we're your long term mission project. Yeah. That's what we are to you.
Yeah, like you go on there.
You recognize us as people of influence that you need to influence. So you're in the trenches, undercover, deep cover agent to try to win us back. So we'll stop. de-evangelizing and deconstructing and leading people down that path.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Matt, kick the music for me.
There we go.
In a Ein Welt. Rammstein. You know any Rammstein songs, Matt?
Yeah.
This news is not going to be in German. It's going to be in truth. The damn truth. This is Toby Morell. Everybody eat shit and suck my butt.
Truth that transcends language and ethnocentric cultures.
All right. This comes from our good friend Dumpy, roving reporter Scott Sinclair. Scott Dumpy Sinclair.
He's one of my favorite people on the face.
He always sends me local news in South Carolina. I love it. This comes from WCNC. South Carolina stripper beats man who pointed out her muffin top.
Mm-hmm.
Can anybody guess the name of her strip club? It has to do with the butt.
Beat that ass.
Okay. Nope. Think of a clever name for a strip club.
Butts, we've got them.
Nope. Derriere's Gentleman's Club. Hell, it appears, hath no fury like a stripper scorned. A Florida man visiting a Myrtle Beach, South Carolina jiggle joint told police an exotic dancer.
They called it a jiggle joint?
That should have been their name.
I know. I love that.
Where are you getting
I'm gonna
this
get
from?
That tattoo on my butt.
Where are you
on
getting
one
this
cheek
from? Where are you getting this story from?
Did you hear me? I reported
WCNC.
It already.
I
want to
hear it.
You're
going
to have to listen to the podcast.
I already said it. I memorized it.
What?
WCNC.
So they NBC. Call it a jiggle joint?
Yes.
Huh.
You've never heard that before?
Yeah,
what was
I've
the other thing you'd never heard before? It's really weird.
Oh, a happy ending.
Yeah. they told police an exotic dancer attacked a Florida man, said an exotic
so
dancer.
So when you get out of the shower, is your bedroom a jiggle joint?
No, it's the bone pit. That's what it's called. An exotic dancer attacked him after he said she should go to the gym and lose weight. According to the local news report, the man, Kyle Yeomans,
I like how
23 years old.
I like how jiggle joint just kind of rolls off your tongue.
Told officers last Monday that Derriere's Gentleman Club performer beat him in the face four times.
Matt, say jiggle joint.
Jiggle joint.
Toby, say it again.
According to a statement he made to police, Yeoman said the stripper was annoying him, and he said that she kept trying to talk to him.
Say jiggle joint.
And he was tired of it. After making his comment, the dancer then reached off stage and struck Yeomans four times in the face during an early Sunday incident.
In the
before
jiggle
bouncers
joint?
Ejected him.
From the jiggle joint? They ejected him from the jiggle joint?
The man told police he was drunk and rated his intoxication level an 11 out of 10.
Oh my gosh, was he getting drunk in the jiggle joint?
Okay, well, let's just pause the news and get this out.
I'm having a conversation.
No, you're
not
talking.
Really.
You can't
you're
stop
you're
the
trying
news
to
and put attention on me.
You're talking to the universe. No,
that's what you're begging
okay.
for.
Well,
we paused.
I had some questions. First question is, did he get ejected from the jiggle joint? Did he get drunk in the jiggle joint?
He got ejected from the jiggle joint.
Did the violence happen in the jiggle joint?
That's not the name of it, though. It's called Derriere's. I suggested that it should be called.
I simply was asking
the jiggle
some
joint.
Jiggle joint questions. Go ahead with your news. It's a stupid story.
It's not
no
a stupid story.
Scott,
a man was beaten.
It's offense
a man was
to you.
Beaten.
A woman was sexually harassed.
Well, you're not
and that's
taking
a stupid
it
story.
You're not taking it serious.
I am. I'm reporting. You're calling a. You can't.
I'm asking questions that you won't answer.
It just like in college, you're fascinated with jiggle joints. And to be honest, no one's joints jiggle more than Joyce's. Your body is the most jiggle jointed thing
ain't,
on earth.
You can argue against that.
All right. We got time for one more, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Can it be a jiggle joint story?
Jiggle joint Joey. Didn't ruin it for everybody? Okay.
Let's hear a happy ending about a jiggle joint.
All right, here's one I found. It comes from Fox. No one, and you know what? I might not have found this, and this might be a roving reporter, but I don't know. So
every time you say roving reporter, I think
if it is
Grover.
I can't find where it came from. So this potentially could be a roving reporter, and I don't even know. My brain is gone. No one is born gay, Billboard advertiser responds. To controversy. A billboard on Interstate 95 is stirring up controversy in downtown Richmond. It says nobody is born gay.
Why can't
and the organization claims to help people who have overcome being gay. Identical twins, it reads, one is gay, one is not. Nobody is born gay. So it's basically a picture right. of two identical twins. One right. is gay, one is not. It says nobody's born gay. Basically saying that you choose it. It's an ad posted on the interstate by a group called PFOX, Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays. It's an in-your-face message hitting where it hurts for many gay in the community. I'm shocked and really disappointed that at the end of 2014, we have a billboard in the middle of our city that says this kind that kind of hate, said Beth Panalatis, executive director of ROSME, an organization that supports LGBTQ youth. It goes on to talk a little bit more, but do y'all think that's hate? Would y'all classify that as hate? That billboard is just hate, and it's making.
No, I think that's not. It may be something that is a held view that is prominent among people that are hateful.
Yes,
but that in itself isn't necessarily hate. I don't believe it's actually kind of interesting to think about, but I would suggest you should think about it on both ways. So,
okay.
First of all,
I'm agreeing with you so far.
In this case, there's a set of identical twins. Identical twins have the exact same DNA. So the suggestion is if somebody is born gay, it would be a gene. It's the gay gene, which is oversimplified already because a lot of qualities that people have are what's called polygene traits, where it's a bunch of things make it up, like your height. It's not just one gene where you can read it and then find out somebody's height. Your height is a bunch of genes working together, that your hair color, you would assume, even if sexuality is genetic, it would be a very, very complicated sets of genes, alcoholism, all those things. Anyway, twin studies are one of the best things we can do to actually understand stuff, because you can take sets of twins that were separated at birth and then see how they came out the same or different, and knowing, therefore, what things are genetic or not. You could never do that, however, for a single case. It has nothing to do, is nothing but anecdotal in a certain case like this, because there's so many other factors that could go into how somebody chooses to identify sexually later.
Yeah.
It's not as black and white, pardon the pun, as hair color or eye color or height. So even if they both have the gene, one could be pretending, one of them could make the decision. It doesn't matter. It's not significant anyway. So the question would be, how would anybody respond? They're suggesting twin studies here, and I'm not aware that there's enough of them done. There may be. Somebody could look it up. But if there was overwhelming evidence, it could go one way or the other, and how would the other side deal with it is the question.
Right. Yeah.
Because what if you – I mean, seriously, what if there was – we had enough data, 40,000 twin studies and 39,992 of them, whatever – the twins separated at birth, these are, found later. What if in all of those cases – they were found when one of the children, that their sexual orientations always matched, even separated at birth and everything else. And you found, wow, that would be very strong evidence that you are born that way.
Right.
Or vice versa, if you found that it had zero correlation, it was dead 50-50, then that would be strong evidence that you are not born gay.
Yeah.
How would either side take that? And it certainly wouldn't, it's not hate to suggest it. I mean, you do find that in these debates, neither side actually is very interested. Nobody, almost anywhere, is actually very interested in trying to get real data on it.
Well, here's what I would say that it's not hateful, but it's unwise. And I definitely...
It could be mean in nature.
I definitely think you could say that it's unloving. And the reason why is because you're speaking to a general demographic of real people, and you're talking about something that those people are saying, hey, this is me. Why are you attacking this thing that is me? So it's super unloving. And I think that if they realize how it's coming across and they do it anyway, then I would say it's hateful. Like if they know
the likely outcomes of seeing that billboard does cause harm to individuals, at least how they would receive it, for sure. More than not. The most outcome of that billboard will be belittling.
This might. I hope this doesn't sound hateful, Matt, but I think you've said this, and I've been really thinking about this lately. I think identifying as something maybe is what is the problem. Like maybe sexuality is just more fluid than we're saying it. And like, I'm gay, I'm straight, I'm this.
You don't
like,
need like, to have to prove that it was genetic to, like, it's reasonable to just, I'm going to identify. Like, it's reasonable.
It's reasonable to just say, I prefer this.
Or I prefer today. This right now.
Right now.
Like, that's okay.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand.
I'm trying to understand.
In a locker room, 12 years old, a boy realizes, hey, all these dudes are talking about how cute she is and this girl and talking about whacking off to her and all this stuff. I'm attracted to these guys.
Are you into...
He's not deciding anything.
Yeah, but I'm into way different stuff sexually than I was when I was 12, personally.
Yeah, about but you?
What I'm saying though is a 12-year-old dude that's discovering himself sexually, he's not deciding, yeah, I'm gonna like boys. If anything, he's just like, whoa, oh, yeah, something's wrong with me.
Right. I'm just saying it could be theoretically, it could be anything. You could
but
be
that's
something.
Also because what we're saying is it's like one or the other. You're gonna be one. And all I'm saying is that puts somewhat of a pressure of, oh, I'm not like them, so I must be this. But I mean, at the same time, I mean, like, I forget who it was I was listening to, but guy made a point like there are times where there is a man, right?
Right.
That was molested, got a blowjob from another male when he was a younger age, and now he's married, totally heterosexual. But there are some times where the way he gets off is he goes and gets a male prostitute.
Yeah.
And
that's so touchy for people because the idea is if you suggest that abuse and trauma, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying you're saying
I'm not.
Homosexuality, that is really, really frowned upon. Right. However, it could be also true for some. Just like right. We know that women who are abused
is, what I'm saying is, why would you
trauma?
Have to say, no, that guy's gay? Right. That guy's totally gay. No,
it's just something.
He's married, has right. kids, yeah. and all this stuff. There's something in there. And
I agree.
Don't start. Everybody jump on trauma. That's not what I'm getting onto. I'm saying the same way as Joey. You've said before that when you were little, you experimented with some stuff, touched peepees or whatever it might be. That doesn't define you. And if somebody said, "Hey, you touched a peepee," that means you're gay. Like right. Then it's not one or the other. Is all I'm saying. And I think that causes a lot of pressure for people to say, "This is what I am." My sexual identity really matters. When honestly, we're sexual. We are all sexual, and it shouldn't matter.
Either
way. And then, maybe, of course, your religion can inform you. Of course, your culture can inform you and all that stuff. But saying this is what I am, no matter what.
I believe the long-term future is people's sexual identity will just be whatever you decide. And there's you don't have to. It's kind of a thorn in the side of the LGBTQ movement, in my opinion, that at this time, they need to fight for born that way to justify.
Right.
I think maybe in a few hundred years, it might just be, I don't care if I,
right.
who
F
cares
you.
If I was born that way. I'm just as me is what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm doing this now. I might always do it. Or I have always been this way. And some people don't. Some people have. It doesn't matter. So the long-term future for them would be it's not anything at all. It's just whatever you happen to be doing it's just out there. It's just whatever.
I mean,
that'd be the long-term victory, but they right now, they're
that
it's
sounds
like,
scary probably to both sides, Christian.
It does. That's
non.
What I'm saying.
People
right now,
like,
right now, the LGBTQ movement is sticking on with, well, if we can just prove that we're born this way, maybe they'll leave us alone.
Right.
If it was okay, they don't even need to do that.
I definitely
think. So it's a short step is all I'm saying.
I definitely
And that's still without me commenting on what I even think.
I definitely agree that it's more fluid. And I would say that someone that really influenced me was Science Mike on the LGBT episode of The Liturgist, like how he explained it and how I've heard you explain it too. I just think that it's a little dangerous just to say, yeah, it's fluid, when young boys and girls, they're not thinking, how am I going to be a sexual creature? I think that I'm going to go that just doesn't happen.
No, nobody thinks that way. Everybody just is into what they're into, and they're into different stuff later, and they're into what they're into. It's everybody.
Nobody's really thinking
about it or making decisions.
The more
that
I think about it, though, I definitely think that people's sexuality is nature and nurture. And I mean, for example, I mean, we all grew up in a culture where there was a certain body type of females that we were taught to be attracted to.
Right.
And the, 1600s, it was fat girls.
Almost all 12-year-old, 14-year-old boys like
big boobs,
and
skinny waist.
Supermodel, probably boring. Like I'm like at this point in my life, I could be into way more broad or diverse things.
Right.
But at one point, it would have just been the most vanilla thing that somebody would tell you is hot.
Right.
And I didn't choose anything at any point. I just find myself where I am at every point. What I want, just whatever. It's just I'm not defending or saying certain things aren't good or bad or wrong or hard.
And also, I'm not trying to rob somebody of how they feel either.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Like it for sure. Joey, you are attracted to females, and you're not going to be gay.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. But if you look at it on a spectrum,
but you could. I'd say you could.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think you could be. I think you could potentially. I also think it's more maybe like a spectrum. Like there might be actual things that go on in your body that lead you a certain way. Like there might be hormones, upbringing, nature, and all that stuff that might be happening. So you're in on a certain level on the line, and somebody else is, I'm on a certain level on the line, Matt's on a certain level on the line, whatever it might be, and maybe that could move one way or the other to an extent.
I mean, you might be attracted to males in the future. You may be somewhat attracted to males now. You might. That's just, if you are, you are. I'm not saying what you should do.
Really good when you said that. I mean, it's kind of a turn on when you said that.
But no, but we're trained to say, well, is he gay or is he not gay? If you do this, is he gay?
I just think that hurts.
You can do it.
That's all I'm saying. I think that hurts, that potentially can hurt the identity on both sides. I'm straight, no matter what. Then, I mean, seriously.
You look like my man.
I'm just saying, like for sure. I mean, people have dreams. Joey, you were very open and honest. I literally have had dreams before. A sex dream where I was having sex with somebody, and then I remember specifically one dream where it became a man, and I was
and
I was like, I gotta finish.
Right,
I'm going to. This is a dude. Oh, and if somebody said that means you're gay, then that could wreck me in a sense, not because of the gay thing, because they told me, oh, this is what you are now.
Right,
that's all I'm saying. Like, if somebody says, hey, this is what you are, you're either this or this, that can be detrimental. But you're right. I don't want. At the same time, what's really scary about that is younger people and all that stuff that you say, well, you're this or you're this, you're this. And they're having to make a sexual decision at like 12 or 8.
Yeah.
I don't want it. Just don't even be thinking about that stuff. If you can't. And when it happens, don't make it such a lifetime thing. Maybe like, just hold on, figure this out. What does your religion say? What does your family say? What do you actually say? All these things.
I'm for de-emphasizing sexual orientation, period.
Yeah.
There's no downside to not emphasizing or reinforcing sexual orientation at all, because everybody is a person. Like, there's a person that I think should marry a strong, dominant person. There's a person I think doesn't need to do that because that points to something weird or codependent in their life.
I agree.
And, you know, there's no blanket rules of stuff. I don't even have any strong stance here, but I don't think there's any downside to not reinforcing stuff like that. You treat people as individuals and see what's right for them or wrong. It might be wrong in every case for everybody. You can still handle that on an individual level.
It would not be fair for me to tell you your sexual identity or the idea that you need a sexual identity. Like that, you know what I mean? Like it should be, you live your life and you are informed by that, and not, you don't have to prove it because, oh, well, I this, and this, it means I'm straight. This, and this means I'm gay. But that is what I think sometimes can be detrimental. And you're right. Like, instead of saying, oh, I'm born this way, you just go, this is where I'm at.
This is what I feel right now.
This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I felt then. This is what I feel now. And tomorrow, and this sounds scary, I think, to both sides, because tomorrow, what will you be? And you can't say that and stuff. And fine, you can say whatever you want. You can say you're straight. You can say you're gay. You can say you're bisexual. You can say you're transsexual. Well, you can say whatever. It doesn't offend me in the least. I don't care how people want to identify.
It's probably mostly like the football team that you're into. It's just, you know.
I mean, there's tons of pastors that are fully 100% sold out to the Lord, and then they're not. And they have seriously crazy stories about how the Lord spoke to them. I mean, there's tons of people that we know that we've talked to. The Lord spoke to them. They would have said, Dave Bazan or whatever, you know, fully Christian, sang worship music, all this stuff. And then later, through stuff, he changed.
But the funny thing would be if he came back and was a Christian again, nobody would go, nope, you're not.
Right.
Like, if you're gay and then you're straight, or if you're straight or did gay stuff, and you say, no, I'm straight. Right. No, he ain't.
And that's where Christianity like, gets it wrong. Yeah, totally. You don't believe it. Or, you know, like somehow now you're a hero because your sexual preference changed to what other people think is right. You know what I mean? Like, oh, wait a minute, man. He was really deceived and lost when he left and became gay. And now he's back. And, oh, man, what an honor. You know, he's doing the right thing by having sex with women. Come on. Come on, Christians, be loving a little bit
Figure
some stuff out. Right. Understand?
Less categories and more individual. And then you feel led to counsel or talk to an individual or deal with them, I'll leave that.
Yeah, I just think people can be cruel with the way
you don't need the category stuff.
Force identity and like it's the needed thing, as opposed to, hey, this is Jill, this is Mike, this is Steve, as opposed to this is a straight person, this is a gay person. That stuff's like, come on.
As long as you remember it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
You're right, Joey.
And that's the damn news right
there. That is the damn news. Anyway, yeah, that is the damn news. That was kind of an more intense damn news ending.
That was intense, man.
We don't ever get...
It was so LGBT.
We don't... ever get that hard, do we? Felt like we got really hard. You guys.
I was trying to test your sex line, Danny. Damn it.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com. Shh.